every weekend, now through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Up next, Voices from the Edge, Joanne Hardesty is speaking with author and activist and former KBOO host Norman Solomon, who's in Portland for the Underground USA Symposium, next on KBOO.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This film this month, Incarcerating Us, will play Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. With 2.3 million people behind bars, the U.S. has the largest prison population in the history of the world. Incarcerating Us tells the story of America's broken criminal justice system through the eyes of those who created it, those who have suffered through it, and those who are fighting to change it. Again, that's Incarcerating Us, Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Space is the Place, showing Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. Space is the Place is an Afrofuturist science fiction classic film released in 1974. Sun Ra, space age prophet, philosopher and Afro jazz bandleader, lands his spaceship in Oakland, expanding the cosmic consciousness of African Americans. Again, that's Space is the Place, Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of your homepage under Community Events. Thank you.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my extreme pleasure to have in a studio with me this morning, Norm Solomon. And I negotiated with him earlier and told him I would only read a short version of his bio, because if I read the whole thing, that would take a half hour. So I'm just going to give you some nuggets from this absolutely fabulous bio. So Norman Solomon is a journalist, media critic, author, and activist. He wrote the nationally syndicated Media Beat weekly column from 1992 to 2009. His dozen books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Oh my gosh, is that timely?
Unfortunately.
The Los Angeles Times called the book brutally persuasive and a must-read for those who would like greater context with their bitter morning coffee, or to arm themselves for the debates about Iraq that are still to come. A documentary based on War Made Easy was released in 2007. Solomon is the founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a consortium of policy researchers and analysts. He is IPA's executive director and the coordinator of its Exposed Facts project. He is co-founder of the online organizing RootsAction.org, which now has more than 650,000 active supporters. Solomon is a longtime associate of Media Watch Group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. In the summer of 2015, Solomon became a member of the Carriage Foundation Advisory Board. Solomon was a volunteer with KBOO from the 70s?
Throughout the 70s, yeah.
Throughout the 70s. Yeah. And so welcome to our studios.
Thanks, Joanne.
I should say welcome back home, huh?
I'm back home.
What a privilege to have you here. And it's absolutely true. If I kept reading, I'd be reading and reading and reading for the next 20 minutes or so. But I want to talk to you about your work and why you're here in Portland. So you're here for a conference?
Well, there's a cartoon event on Saturday that people are invited to, and I can't draw beyond stick figures.
Right,
I got to
right.
say, I'm a word person, but I did write for the Portland Scribe, which is sort of the through line of the conference. A lot of people who are cartoonists and writers are going to gather at Underground USA, which is happening on Saturday, this coming Saturday, at the White Stag Auditorium. And we're going to start meeting around 9 a.m. so people can drop by.
Very cool. Very cool. And so you have been, let me say, I just learned about your connection to Roots Action because it's one of those fabulous online activism tools that provides you wonderful information and instant ability to connect with your elected official about some really critical issues.
Well, I've been really thrilled to be part of the incubation and growth of RootsAction.org. We now have, as you mentioned, right now 700,000 active people around, mostly in the United States and mm-hmm. around the world. And I co-founded it with Jeff Cohen, who was the founder of the Media Watch Group FAIR about 30 years ago, largely out of a recognition that we needed an independent online activism arm for progressives. And whatever the virtues of groups such as Move On and Democracy for America, especially with a Democrat in the White House, there's a tendency to go along, to get along, to not challenge policies that even under a Republican, they would be screaming bloody murder
yes.
against. And certainly
yes.
war, in particular, militarization of U.S. foreign policy to an nth degree, and we see that at home. And so more lately, there has been some sensitivity to and denunciation of, more widely, the militarization of police forces in our own country.
Yes.
Well, that is part of a continuum of militarization of consciousness, of the economy, of a mentality, of you solve problems by getting the iron fist coming down. And, you know, I was on a bus on Fifth Avenue yesterday here in Portland and saw a lot of heavily equipped,
yes.
militarized, one might say, Portland police holding the line against a bunch of people who were standing in front of an office building. I thought, what's that about? Because the police were facing those people, and then I realized they had their back. These police officers had their back to City Hall across the street.
Yes.
And it was only later when I read about it that the light bulb went on. And
mm-hmm.
the more things change, we still have this essential battle going on between the forces of, I would say, keeping people, quote unquote, in their place,
yes.
supporting the status quo, which is unjust for some and makes others a whole lot of profit.
Yes. And what was most frustrating is the media continues to just focus on protesters, right? Protesters and police. So you have this militarized force that over the last 2 weeks have shut the public out of City Hall. You are making major public policy decisions, committing millions of dollars, and you refuse to hear from the public?
Yeah.
And what you do is you get police from Homeland Security, from Gresham Police, from Troutdale, from TriMet. They had police from all over the region to keep the public out of their city hall.
Oh, this is the Coalition of the Willing?
Yes.
Is that
yes,
it? Yeah,
absolutely.
The highly funded, while we've got people, not only in this city, of course, around the country, who are living on the streets.
Yes.
We got the richest country in the world. And it is back to, again, back to the future. The more things change, you know, it's said history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes an awful lot.
Yeah.
And when we've got decade after decade, a power structure that enriches large corporations. And, you know, we are protesters because the system doesn't work.
Right, right.
If it worked to stay in channels, we would simply stay through channels. But it's a metaphor as well as a literal reality that people, as yesterday at City Hall, are locked out.
Yes, yes. Right, right. I mean, it's a perfect example. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I could just talk to Norman by myself all day, but this is talk radio. And so please give us a call. And so what a in-your-face kind of experience to get off the bus and all of a sudden there you are like, whoa, what's going on
here? In terms of being in Portland, I feel a little bit like Rip Van Winkle, you know, and yet, of course, I mean, of course, there are enormous changes we've had in our society. We've been digitized. There's a lot of chain stores that have come in. There's a lot of positive that I see in terms of institutions that endure and grow, KBOO being an obvious one. I was so thrilled to walk down the street in, I guess they still call it Old Town or
oh,
whatever
right,
that that area. Yes, uh-huh. And there is Sisters of the Road Cafe,
yes,
which began in the 1970s, just a courageous instance of people saying, we have our own values and we're going to live them out and we're going to make them work.
Yes, yeah. And we believe in the dignity of all people.
Yes.
So anybody who walks in our door is treated absolutely like they matter, right? Yeah. And what a fabulous institution. You're absolutely right. One of my favorite organizations that has survived and thrived in this time. Let's talk a little bit about fairness and accuracy in reporting. You know, we all, especially those of us in alternative media, certainly understand spin. And we see spin on a regular basis from the traditional media.
Yes. Well, I happened to learn about media bias from living in Portland throughout the 1970s into the mid-80s, reading the Oregonian newspaper. Because, of course, there's some individual good columnists and individual good articles, but the massive amount, and of course, propaganda, the essence of it is repetition, the drumbeat, what's put in, what's left out.
Yes.
And as is the case around the country, metropolitan areas are dominated by these corporate profit-driven entities, which, as you were mentioning, in the instance of the conflict over the police contract, the attraction is to the superficial, to avoiding the detouring around the underlying issues where undemocratic processes endure. And so FAIR was founded in the mid-1980s, and I had very little to do with it. I was sort of present at the creation to say, look, rather than the myth, the meme that was widespread at the time, propagated ironically by mass media themselves, that the mass media were somehow liberal, whatever that means.
Yeah, right.
In fact, we had so much in terms of a male bias, a white, often racist, at least tacitly bias, corporate bias, pro-war, stenography for the powerful, whether it's the local power structure of the corporate entities or U.S. foreign policy and militarism and Wall Street, that there has been and continues to be this essential necessity that we challenge by analyzing, doing content analysis, and organizing. And, you know, the phrase media activism is one that has been enlivened and popularized by FAIR as a media watch group and still very much active online at FAIR.org. And yet it seems sort of like an oxymoron. It's like media activism? Like, it's like, well, the message from media is the opposite of activism. You're just supposed to sit there and buy things. And yet we know that everything we can be proud of in this country, whether it's in Oregon or around the nation, is because people organized and they were active and they pushed back.
That's
and that means not being passive.
That's right. That's absolutely true. And if this presidential election hasn't taught us about media bias, we will never understand media bias, right?
Yes.
Where here we have a major party candidate who everyone knew was a sleaze bucket when he first put his name in to run for president. And yet somehow now people are surprised that he has been inappropriate with women his entire life. I mean, if that's not media bias, media pretending, I mean, because I kept saying early on, why does he get so much airtime? Why do they, whatever comes out of his mouth, no matter how stupid, it's news.
Absolutely. If not for cable television, Donald Trump would have been an asterisk for the 2016 campaign.
Yes.
They broadcast, as you allude to, hours and hours of live speeches. Donald Trump's latest speech from State X, City Y, is about to come up. Stay tuned. They did that month after month. They gave him the equivalent of many billions of dollars worth of advertising, quite literally.
Yes, they did.
And that really made it possible. And as you say, it was not rocket science. It was it was hidden in plain sight, at least hidden as far as media would acknowledge, for those many, many months, the misogyny, the racism, the nativism, the hostility to immigrants, just some of the most foul, vicious, retrograde aspects of tendencies in U.S. society. And so here we are now, and, you know, better late than never, but certainly information has emerged that very few can avoid.
Right. Well, I'm going to go to the phone line because we've got a few callers lined up, but please don't let me forget because I want to talk about whether or not we have fair elections in the United States of America. So let's not forget that. I'm sorry. Hello, Sunny. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good Good morning. Good morning, Joanne, and good morning to your guest. Nice to listen to you folks. You're both so articulate and well-spoken. And
thank you.
And passionate about these issues.
Well, you know what? The passion is rising amongst a lot, lot of people. I mean, they are truly finding their whole beings within, you know, the, what's going on. And I was just going to say, I had wanted to come down to Stone Soup at KBOO and visit with everybody and do my part, but I've been pretty ill, so I haven't been able to do a lot of anything except work.
Oh, sorry to hear you've been ill.
That's all right. I'll come through it. Thank you, though. One thing about Trump is Trump reads Mussolini every night before he goes to bed, and when you look at him standing there at the podium often and he purposely turns his face down, his lower lip down into that Mussolini fat lip. He is so dysfunctional that he literally tries to channel Mussolini in front of the American people whose grandpas fought Mussolini's butt.
Right.
And I mean, it's just like, hey, get ready. I mean, and it's just so, it's so delusional to, oh, Mussolini, no, you don't, you know, whatever. And then as far as the media was just basically giving him a bubble bath, not to clean him up, but just such a great time. He could just sit there and, like, frolic in a bubble bath of love, right?
Right.
And then Hillary, during the debate, as he is bringing home somewhat rightly, or correctly in that instance, the fact that the FBI said that she had been very, very careless in relation to high security matters and her emails and all of, you know, she was out to lunch as a Secretary of State. Basically, she was so busy making war that she couldn't pay attention to her privacy and confidentiality. But anyway, she's sitting there chuckling and smirking. They are so ding, ding, dong crazy. But then the last thing about it is when you catch the regular mainstream media,
right,
local, the coverage of this protest yesterday, you can tell that even amongst the local stations, the coverage was pretty strong, like, wow, what the heck is going on? And I felt that they gave greater time than usual to the protesters talking about. One said, I was holding the door because someone had fallen down and was going to be trampled and trying to help people get out, and they came up and they pepper sprayed me right in my eye. And the way they lingered on the whole thing, I thought, well, you know, even mainstream local media is saying, what's going on here? What's going on?
Well, I hope that's so. Thank you, Cindy.
Yeah,
I appreciate your call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, that's okay. Great. I mean, it's notable. I mean, the TV, and I didn't see any of the TV coverage, but I saw the cameras there interviewing some people who'd been in the protest. And sometimes, I mean, I see that, you know, corporate media is a wall, but it's not monolithic. There are cracks in the wall. And that has to be, you know, acknowledged and encouraged. And we need to find those cracks, widen them, and encourage journalism. We're just asking for even-handed journalism rather than stenography for the powerful forces. And I know from just way back when I was doing organizing with a lot of folks to shut down the Trojan nuclear power plant, and we were protesting there beginning in 1977, we got some good coverage, not from the Oregonian, but from some of the TV stations that were willing to give us sort of equal time to express and make our case.
Right, right. And you are absolutely right. I mean, there are some just excellent reporters who won't just take the corporate press release and just read it as if it's news. They'll actually go out and talk to people and really try to understand the other side. I think for me, I've been most frustrated because, again, it becomes all about the protest and not why people are protesting in the first place.
Absolutely.
I mean, people don't just protest because they have nothing to do, right?
Yeah.
It takes a lot to get people to take to the street and to start demanding accountability from their elected leaders.
Yeah.
And so I think, maybe you know the answer to this with all your travels. I'm trying to figure out if it's even legal to make public policy when you lock the doors of City Hall and don't let the public in.
Oh, well, from what I read in terms of what happened yesterday that might be litigated. You know, we're going to see. I mean, it's almost a virtual democracy if you see it on closed circuit TV. Was that an open meeting?
Right, you know, right. But aren't you supposed to be able to testify, give your input, ask questions of your elected leaders?
One right? would hope. I suppose part of the motivation from the mayor and so forth in this case in Portland is that there's a desire to avoid the face-to-face interaction so that people can see the contradiction in the argument.
Yes, 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 right. Because if everybody who testifies, now when they allowed us to testify, other than the mayor and the police association, no one testified in favor of the contract. Mm-hmm. So if you're a public body, that should get your attention, right?
A lot of times it's a battle between behind the scenes, under the surface, big money.
Yes.
They've got the money. We've got a lot of people.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Chinook. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
I just tuned in late, but listening to the intelligence of the conversation, I figured out it was Norman Solomon.
Yes, yes, phone. Yes.
And I am so grateful for your insight, and I wish it could go far and wide, and I am very concerned about our stage here. We're between late stage capitalism and fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Fascism is indicated by police working in squads like the military,
mm-hmm.
and we're here. And one of the notable factors of it is a press that gives the message as opposed to the truth.
Yes.
And we are captured by that. And I find that we as, what do you call us? You can call us citizen consumer victims or vagrants. It's a progression there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the citizen part has to do with supporting the press. And it's really annoying to want to, like, pay the Oregonian to make me mad. At
how, yeah, right. You want me to buy that, right?
That is. But I'm a member of KBOO, of Democracy Now!, of The Guardian. And I'd like to just ask, how can we expect to have a democracy when the corporations are paying the freight for our information?
Well, the support for outlets like KBOO and Democracy Now! Is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for those points.
Well, it's so important and so light. It's just not a message being made, even by you, Norman. I think there's a way that we can emphasize that only a free press will get us out of here, and a free press can only be created if it has multiple broad funding. If it has narrow funding,
yes.
As
a free press is not free.
Today.
A free press is not
right.
free, is what you're saying, right? It costs money to have
exactly.
free press. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly, and we are strobed by these big dark places that aren't covered, and there's not the funding to cover it. I was reading that there's very few bureaus in Africa, news bureaus in Africa.
Well, I think you're very, very correct on that. And in terms of, it reminds me, in terms of corporate media, say the big networks, it reminds me of the story of the person who walks out of the restaurant and, complains, oh, that food was so rancid and the portions were so small. I mean, given the quality of the U.S. TV network's coverage overseas, I don't really care if they have a lot of bureaus overseas, because the quantity of coverage is an independent variable of the quality. And going back to the Vietnam War, the quality of coverage, they had plenty of bureaus in Southeast Asia, horrible coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your key points there are very important, and we've got to fund independent alternative media, alternative to the corporate power structure.
Absolutely.
So I have one question to leave you with, and okay. then I'll let other people.
And I have one thing for you before you hang up, so don't hang up after your question.
Okay. I'm impressed with The Guardian. The Guardian is set up on a co-op mode where its owner can't be tweaked by powers. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering why we can't create now, because we need it desperately now before November, but it would be too quick, is a set of co-ops, not just one, but like competing co-ops, because there's different views and they ought to be expressed. But we need to get nationwide co-ops with local nodes like KBOO feeding into it. The UPI and AP used to be that, but we need to create that in a...
For community media. I like that.
Yes.
I like that. That's a great idea.
It needs broad support by the Bernie folks or whoever.
I agree. It needs broad support. But here's what I wanted to say to you. I am so grateful to live in a time where I see natives from all over the world coming together, standing strong against economic interests that's actually continuing to destroy the earth. I mean, I never thought I would live in a time where I would see Native tribes from all over the world standing fast together. And so I just want you to know that I feel very privileged to live in a time where Natives are standing firm and Black Lives Matters are standing firm. And we are rocking the comfortable middle class existence of the capitalists. And so I just wanted you to know that that has not been lost on me or KBOO. And it's a great example of we would know half the things we know about what's happening with the Dakota Pipeline if it were not for media like KBOO and other independent outlets. And thank you, Amy Goodman, for actually, and she's got still, they would arrest her if she shows up back there again. But that's what we need. We need more independent media that tells the real stories of what's happening on the ground. Because quite frankly, there's a lot more happening on the ground than we all know about.
Absolutely.
Well, and thank you for being KBOO.
Hey, we can't be anything but. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Have a great day. And if you're just joining the conversation, I am talking to the fabulously wonderful Norman Solomon, who's here for a convening that's taking place with cartoonists, and he's going to tell us about it again.
Right. This is Norman Solomon talking to the fabulously wonderful Joanne Hardesty. On Saturday, we have this gathering that's called Underground USA. And I think you could Google that for details, but Underground USA, it's happening Saturday. The White Stag Auditorium, that's 70 Northwest Cooch. We're going to start at 9 a.m. And there's a lot of cartoonists with, you know, enormous artistic skills, of which I am genetically and otherwise totally lacking.
I'm with you there.
But we're going to talk about counterculture in Portland, the roots in the 70s, those who converged around the Scribe newspaper and before that the Willamette Bridge, and just sort of trying to put into perspective how we got to where we are.
That sounds like that's going to be a fabulous event. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Chris. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, before I have a few things that I wanted to mention, but do you know what math and art have in common? Is that people think that they can't do it. And it's just a 10,000-hour rule, right? You just got to put in the time, Norman. It's about the time. Okay.
Okay.
I'm a little starstruck. You're really close to some institutions and organizations that have enlightened me. And
yeah, me
I
too.
Say,
I feel the same way. I'm like, whoa, check this out.
Well, starting with KBOO.
I know. And Joanne, you're sitting right there. You're looking at him.
Right. Right. And we took a picture.
Awesome. But yeah, you know, KBOO, huge part of my youth growing up, listening to KBOO, getting exposed to different kinds of music. fairness and accuracy in reporting was huge. I worked at Powell's in Beaverton for a number of years. And we had the magazine in stock, and that was part of the beginning of my political awakening was reading the corrections to mainstream media's inaccuracies.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I mean, those kinds of institutions were really part of my consciousness raising and my self-awareness and my awareness of what was going on in the world. And I just want to say thank you for the work that you do and the way that you spend your time and your energy trying to make this planet a little bit better.
Oh, well, thank you. And I want to mention before I forget that, you know, FAIR has taken on, in a way, a new incarnation online very strongly. And anybody listening, it's free. You just go to FAIR, that's FAIR.org, sign up to get the email alerts. And they're just fabulous deconstructions, almost in real time, of the latest waves of media propaganda.
Nice.
Yes, absolutely. And like the way that FAIR actually, you know, having access to the LexisNexis database, which is a hugely expensive database to be able to access, to be able to do surveys, to do that data mining, to say, nope, that was never mentioned once, you know, across right. all of the major networks. And, you know, to be able to go to that raw material, so to speak, and then to be able to speak from that
yes.
In a way that's so impossible to contradict, you know. So I really appreciate that. And then the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, with the coverage of City Hall and how you were talking about cracks in the wall of the media, is that, you know, we have to remember that media and all systems are made up of humans, right? And
right.
and the system is what functions against us, but it's the possibility that individual humans can transform themselves and make a different decision. Even when they're in the midst of that system that's kind of perpetuating those lies. And I think that's what gives me a little bit of hope in talking about that news coverage that was just shining a little bit more light on the situation.
Right. But here's what we need to do. We need to, like, call OPB and say, you need to bring the other side on to Think Out Loud, right?
Yeah.
You always talk to the police. You talk to the mayor. You never talk to the real people in the community that have to live
right.
with the consequences of their actions, right?
Right.
We need to
you
call...
That would be really interesting when they're doing one of their drives, right?
If exactly, yes.
A counter drive to mm-hmm. do a phone bank where we had folks call in and say, I'm not giving you money. What I need you to do is...
right.
Well, let me segue, use this as a reason, excuse, pretext to segue into talking about, quote, public broadcasting, unquote, mm-hmm. in this country. You know, the Carnegie Commission, way back under Lyndon Johnson, recommended that public broadcasting should emerge as a place for voices that were not otherwise heard. And
that's
yet,
right.
if you watch the major PBS programs, you listen to All Things Considered and Morning Edition, you are hearing overwhelmingly the voices that are heard elsewhere. As a matter of fact,
that's
it's
right.
gotten so you're going to hear perhaps more independent alternative voices on CNN or MSNBC than you will on All Things Considered and Morning
mm-hmm.
Edition.
That's
and
right.
it is really stations such as KABU. There are precious few of them, but they're very important around the country, who have supplemented the really downward, have been the alternative to the downward trend. You know, in the 1970s, NPR was breaking stories about Karen Silkwood. They were doing a lot of independent reporting.
Mm.
How much independent reporting is coming out of All Things Considered and Morning Edition? Very,
right.
very little. It is a mouthpiece for the corporate governmental perspectives. All the more reason to support KABU and other outlets that are going to give us a very different version of reality.
Absolutely, and that's no thanks in no small part to Bush, right, who systematically defunded
that's
the
right.
NPR and the public radio broadcasting.
It's a funding thing, but I should say it's also pressure. It's enormous
yeah.
pressure from the right and the center and the establishment to major parties to just hew the line and pretty much these outlets, and these are the two most important NPR outlets, All Things Considered and Morning Edition, they have mm-hmm. basically fallen in line.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's because when you go back and you look at, I remember seeing that systematic defunding where they cut spending, and then that forced them to go out and find other ways of funding. And then that's
yeah,
when
right.
the corporate influence really
right.
kicked up.
That's right.
That's actually the last point I wanted to kind of, the question I wanted to put out is your thoughts on, you know, that the contradiction of trying to smash capitalism, to borrow the Adbusters phrasing, with its own implements, right?
Mm-hmm.
Audre Lorde says you can't tear down the master's house with its own tools. And yet here we are in this capitalist society, and we're trying to figure out how we can bring down capitalism with the tools of capitalism. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, thanks for
Thank you for your call. Thank really you appreciate it. Have a great day.
Well, you know, a healthy ecology has a lot of different aspects. An old growth forest that's really well off is going to just have so many different elements to it, from the trees to the worms to everything. And the same is true, I think, of social movements. And so when it comes to, for instance, elections, it's not a be-all and end-all by any means. It's part of the mixture. People have fought and died for the right to vote. We need to use that tool. I mean, people can call it the people's tool or the master's tool. It's been manipulated by the masters, if you will, but it can be the people's tool. So I see, just to take an example, electoral work as part of the necessary mix. Yes, it can be overemphasized, but it also can be ignored to our peril. And I'm afraid, you know, those of us involved in the Occupy movement, we weren't able to coalesce right then and there in 2011 or 2012, an electoral expression that was united, that was able to gain strength. And yet the Bernie campaign and a lot of local campaigns now, I live near Richmond, California, tremendous Richmond Progressive Alliance campaign, fighting Chevron, defeating Chevron. That's an electoral tool. So I think it's a matter of a diversity of strong elements that will make a successful sets of movements possible.
I think you're absolutely right with that, Norman. In fact, we were able to beat Nestle that tried to get water out of Hood River.
Fantastic.
And the voters, by an overwhelming margin, said, oh, heck no, we don't think so. But then what did they do? They went to another small town and bought off the city council. But again, the community is organizing and fighting back. And so there's nothing that replaces an organized community that puts pressure on the powers that be.
It's so important.
So important.
Yeah.
We got callers stacked up. Hello, Joe. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, and welcome back to Portland, Norman.
Thank you.
I'll try to be brief here. I want to cover three or four things.
You might get to two.
I'll try and get them down in a minute or so here.
Okay.
First of all, we need to occupy the corporations, and that becomes a cooperative. But there's a fundamental mindset in the American workers. I'm just an employee. I want to show up for work, get my paycheck, and go home. I don't want to have to think. We need to change that mindset. People need to think more about being owners. We need to look at the success of places like Winco. And I think KBOO ought to be a hub for cooperatives in Portland, helping bring people together. Another issue I want to mention is barcodes on the ballots here in Oregon, five counties now. They're putting barcodes, they're individual, they're unique, they're on the ballots, they're in strict violation of Oregon statute, which guarantees us the right to a secret ballot. The other thing I want to say is we need to occupy the media. We need to be protesting or demonstrating in front of the media outlets and bringing our points to their noses and getting them to, you know, concede that, hey, we need to be heard. And so I want to thank you for all the wonderful work. Oh, the other thing I'd like to say is we need to vote on issues. We need a national referendum. You know, like Oregon has the initiative procedure, we need that nationally. And so if you in your travels around the country, Norman, find out about any other states that are barcoding their ballots, I'd be interested in hearing about it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, then that's new to me. You know, you're talking about challenging corporations. It's, you know, it's essential in so many realms, whether it's electoral or unionizing. I think it's notable, and we were talking, Joanne, I think you're absolutely correct about the Dakota Access Pipeline, such an important battle, Native peoples and others just gathering together, pushing back legally in terms of demonstrations, in terms of messaging and media. I wrote a piece a few weeks ago about, I think the headline was something like AFL-CIO to Planet, Drop Dead, where the AFL-CIO, here you have the biggest labor federation in the country endorsing the Dakota Access Pipeline. And yet we have the CWA, the Communications Workers of America, opposing it vehemently. You have the National Nurses United opposing it vehemently. So there is a battle within the labor movement
that's
very important.
Yes. And it's always about money.
I'd like to say one other quick thing.
That very quickly.
If all these activists could get together and start manufacturing alternatives, I mean, it's great to protest and get the word out, but we need to actually produce the solutions. And that's
Thank
where
you.
The cooperatives and the activists need to get together and start manufacturing.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Have a great day. If you're just joining the conversation, I'm talking to Norman Solomon, the fabulously wonderful activist, writer, visionary. Hey, he's got it all. And an early KBOO volunteer. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Christopher. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to say thank you to the both of you for calling out the power elite and highlighting the inadequacies in our system. And I'd also like to say some great programming comes from Counterspin, which is Bear's radio broadcast.
Yes.
A lot of good work coming out of, like, Young Turks and community radio stations, real community stations, like KBOO, X-Ray, and other ones. That we shouldn't take for granted when you look at the reporting coming out of National Petroleum Radio.
Yeah, right.
And it just seems more and more that they're just soft pedaling, you know, the neoliberal Washington policies, and really, you know, taking away people's ability to be informed of what's going on in their world.
Well,
and people like you are just working tremendously hard, and you see that yesterday with the cops out there really showing you what's important to them, which is their paychecks, and they're always increasing wages, even though it's kind of weird that they can't find people to hire for cops in Portland, since it's supposedly such a safe and tranquil city, but they can't manage to find any cops to hire here.
So do you know they also needed $3.5 million yesterday on the city council agenda to buy new police cars? And so I'm trying to figure out why they need police cars when they don't have police, so they say, right? So if you don't have police, what do you need the cars for? And why would you spend $3.5 million to buy cars? Because Charlie Hale says it's going to take 18 months to get new officers in, even if this contract was approved. And so do the math. Why do we need to buy police cars today?
Yeah.
Right?
And that's all going to be going towards people's property taxes to pay for those cops' wage increases.
And what the public doesn't know is that anybody who's retired as a police officer, they're going to get a 9% pay raise, right? And we homeowners are going to be footing that bill, right? So all those fat cats sitting back that used to be police officers also get that 9%. And look at your property tax bill, because it's about to go up big time. Have a good day. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
I'm reminded this just because of the very nice things that people are saying. I want to shout out to the Oregon delegates to the Democratic National Convention for Bernie Sanders.
Oh.
I was a Bernie Sanders delegate from California,
right,
and we were in our delegation there. And from across the convention hall, we heard from the Oregon delegation the chant begin, "No more war." While Leon Panetta, the former CIA and Pentagon Department of so-called defense
was speaking.
Secretary, right, was speaking. And it was really the initiative of the Oregon delegates for Bernie Sanders that got us rolling. And we were chanting, and he was, if you see the video, that he was so confused because he thought he was in the living room of his sector of
the ruling class.
And all of a sudden, all these voices are saying, "No more war." And it inspired
nice.
Us to, the next night, do similar chant, the same chant, "No More War," to General Allen when he gave that stemwinder, bloodthirsty speech an hour before Hillary Clinton spoke. And again, it's just so important, the leadership coming from the grassroots, in this case from Oregon.
Nice, nice. Oh, all right, Oregon. Back to the phone lines. Maybe in just a couple of minutes. So let's talk about, what do you think about the integrity of our election system? I mean, now that we are faced with what we are faced with on November 8th, I certainly love living in Oregon because we have a vote-by-mail system. And I know that if I vote for whoever, it's going to be recorded as I recorded it. There are many Americans that don't have that luxury.
Yeah, I think, you know, the paper trail is so badly needed. There's been some progress in that way, but still so far to go. I think it's from Princeton and elsewhere. Computer scientists have shown that there is a hackable problem here with the elections. And I tend to think of it as the death of a thousand cuts, at least the wounding of a thousand cuts of democracy. Because when you think about it, I mean, in some countries, I mean, I was in Iran where the election happens on a holiday.
Yes.
So right off the bat, it's a bias against working people, and it depresses turnout among people who are wage workers who can't just show up. But, you know, that's just the start. I mean, you know, one day for the election, okay, there's progress. You can vote by mail, but there ought to be automatic, and there are now several states.
In Oregon.
Yeah, so great. Again, leading the way. I think there's five now where it's automatic, it's equivalent voter motor or something.
That's right, yes.
Registration. Well, that's another 45 states to go. And then in terms of transportation to the polls, and why do we have elections only one day? I mean, this is designed to depress turnout so that the upper classes get higher representation at the polls.
Absolutely. And in 2016, depending upon your complexion and your economic status determines how long you stand in line, if there is a line, and whether or not you're in that line for 4 to 6 hours.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, today—
it's outrageous.
It is absolutely outrageous. And we claim one person, one vote, but that's not the reality for most people. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Vernon. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank both you and Norman for all of the wonderful work that you've done to take the corporate spin off of the truth and help us to see more sides to the story.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to point out that history has left us a lot of footholds that we can use in our struggle. Even groups of people who may have been racist or all screwed up managed to leave some niches that they had ideals that were worth hanging on to. I'd like to read one sentence out of the Oregon Constitution, if I may.
Okay.
No law shall be passed restraining any of the inhabitants of the state from assembling together in a peaceable manner to consult for their common good, nor from instructing their representatives, nor from applying to the legislature for redress of grievances.
Ooh, that sounds like—
I would like to propose to you that it is a winnable goal to get a court order requiring every police officer to memorize that.
Oh, I thought you were going to go take that
I
quote to the federal court.
To
I
the
was
mayor.
Remanded after doing civil disobedience in Senator Smith's office.
Right.
I was remanded to go to Washington, D.C. and do civil disobedience there in Senator Smith's office. The judge got it. He knew exactly what we were doing.
Right.
And, you know, it's an example. I mean, the electoral process, it's one of the many avenues we need to keep going down. Do we want a Senator Smith or a Senator Merkley? I mean, these are choices that we help make.
And what a difference. I mean, what a great example. I mean, what a difference it makes having a Senator Merkley as compared to a Senator Smith. And I still want to ask Senator you people, Wyden. Why you keep sending Wyden back? Because he hasn't lived in Oregon in over a decade. So why you keep having him represent us? I don't know. But that's another story.
I'd like to say a word about the electoral system as well.
Okay.
While I agree that Oregon is in better shape than most states in this union, by no way are our elections free and fair and absolutely transparent.
Absolutely true.
The machines that are used to scan our votes are definitely questionable. We don't necessarily, it's a county by county situation, but we don't necessarily have a good process for monitoring those machines and making sure that they are counting in an accurate way. Optical scanners are not perfect, and they're built by companies that are very biased. So there's no way that we could be certified free and fair by OSCE, for example. And in fact, I would love to see an attorney general invite consultants from the OSCE, which any attorney general could do, or any secretary of state, rather, would probably be the one to do it.
OSCE?
OSCE, it's Office of Security and something in Europe. It's the organization that oversees elections across Europe.
Oh, okay.
And they have excellent observers and standards for free and fair elections. I worked with them in Palestine in 2006 and was very impressed with the way that they send long-term paid consultants who really help to make the election work properly. And I'd love to see that happen in any state in this union, because frankly, we're not up to par on a world standard for free and fair elections.
Well, that's absolutely true. And thank you very much. I appreciate your call. And I appreciate what you said, Norman, because I was in Australia, and the same thing happens in Australia. Voting is a national holiday. The expectation is in. They are prohibited from doing any kind of campaigning 30 days prior to the election, because their expectation is people are smart enough to read the material that they have and to spend some time educating themselves before they go vote. What a novel approach, huh?
What a concept.
Yeah, right, right. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Brian.
Yeah.
Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Excuse me. That's a good way to start. I wanted to get in line and say thanks to both of you for what you do. I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I wanted to go back to the NPR topic, and it was something I've been thinking about since I heard a story the other day on NPR, and yes, I do listen, although I do bat above my weight as far as KBOO.
Okay, we can share you, it's fine.
I think I used the wrong analogy there, bat above my weight. Anyway, however that works, I'm not a sports guy. Something I've been thinking a lot the last number of elections about how the media plays into the presidential election, and Obama against Romney, it really became clear to me. I just had a feeling inside that it wasn't as close as they made it look like. And I realized that they really need a horse race. I mean, they make so much money off the presidential election that there's no way they're going to allow it to be too distant. And I mean, when we talk about money in politics, where does most of that money go? It goes to the media.
It goes to the media, yes.
They're making so much money.
That's right. Which is why they don't do the public affairs programs anymore, where you bring all the candidates and they're all on the same stage and it's broadcast on media, regular TV, corporate channels, right?
Right.
And they play it over and over again. Because weren't they required to do that, like in the 70s and 80s?
I think up until something like 85 or... Mm-hmm.
The Fairness Doctrine was eliminated.
Right.
What year was that?
I think it is right. It was in the 80s that the Fairness Doctrine was ditched. Yeah,
I grew up, I think, in civics class and stuff like that. We talked about that. And then it just kind of disappeared. Didn't there used to be... Yeah, and it's funny how things can just get relegated to the dustbin. But
exactly. That's not important, because we could make billions. And you're right. If you think about all the money that's going to be raised this election season and spent, 90% of that money will go to media, TV, radio, traditional predominantly. And then the rest of it goes to the paid consultants that get to do the spin. Right?
Yeah.
So it's absolutely, and we're only trying to move 2% of the population.
Yeah.
And now online ads. You can see the New York Times and the front page has got online ads for candidates. Yeah.
Well, the CEO, which CEO was it that thanked Trump for all the money he was making?
Yes, CNN. Right. He said it might not be good for the country, but it's terrific
really
for
good
us.
For us.
Yeah, it's so blatant and out there. And what I wanted to say was about NPR, and I have to admit, I've grown up with it. I love it. I love Car Talk. I love all those shows. I really love them. But listening to their news, I remember back that Tanya Harding what's her name? That thing. That was the first time I realized, wait a second, they're really joined on mainstream, because they put an inordinate amount of time into such a stupid.
Don't feel bad about watching. I mean, I read the New York Times. I'm critical of it. I read, if I'm in town, I read the Oregonian. I'm critical of it. We need to stay attuned and aware of what the mass media are doing. I mean, for that matter, if there were planes overhead of a military nature, of a hostile temperament, I would want to keep my eye on the sky in case something fell out of the planes on me,
That was the beginning of when I started to notice the turn. And then, of course, I remember 9/11 on the 12th, I was listening to the afternoon show on NPR, and Neil Conan, I think he was talking to people, and people were calling in about the feelings about what's happening. And every time somebody called in that was skeptical of American policy, he would just like cut them down. He'd just like he'd just shoot them down. And it was, I remember I was taking a long drive, and I was just pissed off hearing this. And then now, I mean, 2 days ago, I heard a story on there, and it was about a financial analyst that had criticized Trump's Trump Tower when it, or no, the Taj Mahal when it opened, and he was critical. He said this thing's going to make a ton of money at the beginning, and then it's going to falter and go bankrupt. And Trump had him fired. He used all his power and everything to have this guy fired because he said something bad. And
lo and behold,
he was right.
He
was right. And so that was the main story, was that he had turned out to be right. But right at the end, they put in this little zinger of like, however, as far as the person to run the country, this same guy thinks that Trump's the man. Thinking, wow, that could have been a paid announcement. You know,
right.
Everybody knows that Trump is just the.
Thank you
terrible.
So much. Thank you. I've got to try to get a couple of more callers in. Appreciate you greatly. Have a fabulous day.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye. Any comment you want to make?
Oh, just that, I mean, the caller earlier alluded to content analysis. Just to try to get as much of an overview that FAIR, the Media Watch Group, does, then we see the overall proportion. It's not just anecdotal, but how many voices are heard in
right.
a given month through All Things Considered and Morning Edition, for
right.
instance. And it does skew very corporate, very status quo foreign policy, for instance.
Absolutely. Okay, back to the phone line, Pam. Good morning, Pam. Welcome
Good
to K-Booth.
I'm sorry. I do have a frog in my throat.
It's all good.
I just want to let people know that it fries me that the City Hall, which is ours, we pay for it.
Yes.
We pay everything for it. We pay for the people in it. We pay for all those bureaus, which, by the way, I think are the, is what runs City Council, not the other way around. And it gets locked out on us?
Yes.
That's horrible. Isn't there anything we can do to
Well, I see that there's apparently, and we need to go online to check this out, but it should be pretty reachable through Google or whatever, protest planned for Friday.
Oh, yes, I did see that. Well, you know what's scary and frightening and chilling is that the City Hall has been using, the police who work at City Hall have been using Facebook as the reason why they keep locking down City Hall,
oh,
right?
Come on.
So, right, they see that there's a protest schedule, so that gives them the authority to go and get all these militarized police and just lock the building down. I mean, they've been doing it since last week. And so the first question you got to go is, I did a Facebook events page that said, come testify. Did they see that as a threat, right?
Maybe.
If people are saying, come and make your voice heard. And so what is the threshold of a Facebook post that creates a threat that requires you to shut down City Hall and bring paratroopers in to actually intimidate the public?
Preemptive security.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, I mean,
I really hate it. It enrages me.
Me too.
It enrages me. And our employees, those five people that sit up there and, you know, don't listen.
Yes.
Obviously, fiddle around and whatever. I mean.
You know, I mean, the multiplicity of strategies, I think, is so important, and I totally support the protest efforts. And meanwhile, there are three people who voted yesterday.
Yes.
And apparently, as I understand it, the fourth who was not there would have voted with the three.
Yes.
They will come up for re-election.
Yes, they will.
And they need to be challenged, and it needs to be a credible challenge. You know, and I believe that too often progressives treat elections like impulse items. You know,
yes.
You're in the supermarket, then
right.
at the last minute you
but,
see the candy bar near the checkout counter. You grab one?
But.
No. You should be planning 2 years ahead.
Yes.
Develop good candidates, do the research, do the organizing, and get these people out of there.
Yeah, develop good candidates.
That's going to be key. And quite frankly, I appreciate Novick's vote yesterday because he was the one person that did it right. I'm profoundly disappointed with Amanda Fritz because
yes.
she was the only one that I thought would be reasonable and listen to the public.
Yeah,
and
up.
So she could have stopped it yesterday because it would have been a 2-2 vote and it wouldn't have moved forward. And so I think you're absolutely right, Norman. Now's the time to be looking at the next city council race and who we want to represent us. Because if you've got a civil rights attorney that's absent on every civil rights conversation, that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm so angry. I can't even talk, and I can't talk well normally. So continue for me. Thank you so much.
I feel your pain. I share it. And we're all in this together because this is our city hall. This is our city. And if we've got elected leaders who think that they're too elitist.
Living off of us. I mean, Joanne, my savings are decimated because I cannot live on Social Security,
right.
And I can't get a job either. So, I mean, literally can't. Anyway.
It breaks my heart, and yet these people have no clue what working people are going through in this town.
Because they're
so removed. Or people who've worked their whole life, right?
Yeah.
And who now need some help and some assistance, right?
Exactly right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call.
Bye, take care.
You get
later.
To be the last word. Well, almost last word. I'm going to let Norman be the last word. Norman, one more time, Saturday, starting at 9 a.m.
Right, Stag Auditorium. And people should Google, it's the Underground USA.
Google.
Yeah, to get more information. And just as such a pleasure to be back here at KBOO. And Joanne Hardesty, you are a gift to Portland and the world. I got to say, we're all working together.
Yes, we are. And what a pleasure. What insight. I am jazzed. I'm ready to go out and take over the world, Norman. I will see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. You have a fabulous day. This has been Voices from the Edge. Thank you, John, as always, making us sound good.
KBOO Portland, good morning. It's 8:59. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. That's up next at 10, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. And at 10:15 on Flashpoints today, I'll hear a report from Haiti on the effects of Hurricane Matthew and the devastating U.S. policy toward the poverty-stricken nation. Plus, an interview with Walter Riley of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. Press Watch, next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice a board meeting in writing, please email monica@kboo.org.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.